From runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 443, vSphere V6, with guest Greg Shields. Recorded Tuesday, October 6th, 2015. Run As Radio is produced each week by Pwop Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. My guest today is Greg Shields, who is an author evangelist with Pluralsight and is a globally recognized expert on systems management, virtualization, and cloud technologies, and a multi-year recipient of the Microsoft MVP, a VMware vExpert, and a Citrix CTP Award winner. And he's been a contributing editor to Redmond Magazine and Virtualization Review Magazine, and is a co-chair on Tech Mentor Events. Welcome, sir.
Thank you, sir.
And we've talked before, but I don't know that we've ever done a show per se, because I always think of you as a VMware guy, although you seem to get around when it comes to virtualization.
get around is that's great wording. I'm kind of an everything guy, to be honest. I've had my fingers in all three of those different organizations for a very long period
sure.
of time. I think there are only six of us nowadays that have gotten all three of those at the same time.
Yeah, to actually have all the ratings for Hyper-V, for VMware, and for Zen, that's impressive.
Thank you very much.
But it's sort of a mature tech now. We just sort of expect this stuff to work. Do you see a lot of difference between the three stacks anymore?
Well, the joke I always tell people is nothing ever changes, right? So
right.
You kind of hit this certain point where you've seen everything. And when new technologies come out, you go, oh, hey, check it out. I've seen that before.
Mm-hmm.
And even like today for Pluralsight, I'm filming a video on vSphere and auto deploy. And I was getting ready to do the intro for it and thinking, wow, this is DSC. This is partial DSC, which is also something else,
Yes.
So it's what goes around comes around and history repeats itself.
Well, and it feels to me like in general, virtualization is trying to get its hands around this new way of managing your software deployment and projects. Configuration as code has to be retrofitted into virtualization. Or containerization is just going to take them out, because that's what containerization seems to be good at.
This is also funny, because I was also having this conversation with myself earlier today, that what kills me about the recent explosion in interest in the server side on, again, things like DSC, things like DevOps, mm-hmm. containerization, all this is, my story is that you can break the world down into the server guys and the desktop guys.
Right.
And all of this, automated configuration, all of this document-based control, all of this centralized configuration management, even automated deployment
mm-hmm.
is stuff we've been doing over in the desktop side for a decade or more.
If you've got 1,000 desktops to manage,
you have to deal with
you
that.
You can't do it any other way.
So those of us on the desktop side, those of us who have been playing with SCCM since it was SMS 1.2, those of us that have been doing Windows Deployment Services and heck, even Ghost, we kind of look at all this and go, yeah, we figured that out a long time ago.
I think our tools have gotten way better. I much prefer Microsoft Deployment Toolkit over the old Ghost. Ghost served me well at the time, but the moment I could get drivers out of the config file so that I could not have a Ghost image for every hardware configuration, I became a much happier person.
Oh, one of my jokes always was that Ghost is one of the very rare tools in IT that actually gets harder to use the longer that you use it.
Oh, yeah. It becomes a larger management problem.
It does. I actually, I was at a Tech Mentor event. This has been a couple of years ago, and I always like to ask the question, your maximum level, what's the most number of Ghost images you've ever had? And
right.
The largest number was something on the order of about 320.
Oh, man. What's interesting is dealing with your organization when you're being strict about hardware variations because of things like Ghost. Like, that's right. So much the tail wagging the dog. We should be picking hardware configurations on the optimal way for our users to operate. But the fact that we can't manage it effectively because of the limitations of our tools, that's really a conflict.
So yes, I guess I do get a bit of a kick. My now former business partner, Don Jones, and the whole PowerShell crew, as mm-hmm. they're talking about you know, the amazing things they can do with DSC. And yes, they are amazing.
Without a doubt.
But this whole DevOps thing, like I said, from the desktop world, yeah, this is old hat.
We just have to get better at it and start taking advantage of it and managing it in a very different way.
Indeed.
Get me up to speed on where VMware is these days, because it sounds like vSphere v6 is taking this up a notch again. These guys really started this technology. They've led it for a long time. And while I think the others have caught up, are they still innovating out in the front here?
Well, this is in many ways an iterative release. Mm-hmm. I would say this is an evolution more so than any kind of revolution at this point.
Right.
And that's sort of, you know, it's just momentum, I would think. Mm-hmm. Very large ship takes a very long time to make any kinds of turns. So vSphere 6 is just one more step into creating a package that people feel comfortable in deploying in their data centers. And a lot of people do.
Mm-hmm.
There are new features. There are new automations that make it a little easier. There's some new technologies. But at face value, when you look at vSphere 6 in comparison with a 5.5 or even a 5, or 5.0, 5.1, for example, you're not talking about all that much in terms of massive structural change. A good metaphor for this is Active Directory, right? There was a period of time when everyone was talking about Active Directory and you had to, you know, take tests to prove that you knew what it was because
right,
it was brand new and out of the gate. And these days, the changes to Active Directory, although are important, are relatively small in the grand scheme
in the overall scheme of things. Yeah.
But that is by no means to diminish the platform that VMware has created there with vSphere 6, because, I mean, it just the sales of that bear out the truth that people like it, it works, and it's powering a lot of data centers these days.
I think people trust it is really, you know, you're betting an awful lot when you put in a virtualization strategy like vSphere. You better Absolutely. Be pretty confident. It takes a lot of trust to go that deeply into the way you organize your infrastructure.
Just look at it from a reality perspective, right? So you take 20 virtual machines and stick it onto one host. That yep. host better be able to run those VMs.
And if it can't, you should know before people start complaining.
Exactly. And right now, my current project is with Pluralsight, and I'm building out Pluralsight's vSphere 6, really our comprehensive vSphere 6 curriculum.
Oh, yes.
David Davis is doing the foundations. I'm doing the kind of second step, which is the data center stuff. And it is both exciting to be able to do this content. It's also sort of humorous, at least to myself, to see back before I worked for Pluralsight, the content I did for another company,
mm-hmm.
That content, this content being kind of similar, a little bit different, but kind of similar. And it's just nice to be able to see that we've hit such a very solid foundation here for that virtualization platform.
We're kind of at the fundamentals now of what you expect out of virtualization. I remember when vMove was the most crazy thing, like you couldn't believe it was true. Like it was voodoo. Actually, all that P2V stuff, V2V is one thing. P2V was even worse, right? I pointed a machine, I say, make that a virtual machine. At some time later, it says it's done and I can't tell except that I go over to the P and it's not on.
Right. The course that I did. So this is 11 courses in this series, and the course that I just finished, number 6, I believe. I think the quote in there was that vMotion isn't sexy anymore.
No,
it's the technologies that wrap around the monitoring and the mathematics that
right.
wrap around it to take a look at stuff and then to do a vMotion whenever one needs to happen. But it's the actual, like, hey, this cluster is unbalanced. Let's fix it. Or,
right.
hey, I need to take this virtual machine and vMotion it to a completely different geographic location. That's still voodoo to me to
right.
be able to go over very long distances, moderately long distances.
Hauling gigabytes out of data centers is still not trivial. But the fact that the tooling basically makes it the same. I point at a new host and say, yeah, put it over there and just wait.
Correct.
And things just happen. But you're right. We take motion for granted. Now it's knowing what to move and when to move it.
Yep. Yep. It's definitely a good time to be, I'd say, in virtualization. Even with you've got cloud and DevOps and all of those, mm-hmm. those technologies that are really spinning up these days. But in terms of, you know, where would I want to bet my career on? Virtualization and virtualization automation are both excellent places to kind of lay your wager if you're trying to figure out what to do for a living.
I mean, I almost feel like they were getting to a point where betting on virtualization is like betting on operating systems. You know, we're going to be using that, and yeah, you should kind of know how to use it. It's sort of a core skill now. It's not optional. Does anybody now have a debate about whether we should be bare metal or virtualized?
You know, it depends on if you ask VMware or ask other people, I guess. you know, according to VMware, what is it, 99%, if not even more these days? The last time I asked, it was 99% of all workloads are virtualizable. Right. And that's really their fundamental goal, is that.
And I would bet they're just hedging their bets on that 1%. We actually think all of them should be, but I'm sure somebody can come up with a weird case.
And honestly, like I said, I haven't asked the question in a while. It may be 100% here at this point. In the old days, the whole idea was that there was this hypervisor overhead that would, you know, prevent machines from operating in the ways that we would expect them to. If you had real-time systems, a lot of times those real-time systems had special requirements that would preclude them. But they've really diminished that, the tax, the virtualization tax, the overhead that's required. And they've also invested in various technologies and approaches that can assist in some of those real-time solutions as well. So, you know, the whole point is, I think, that the hypervisor is your data center operating system, and everything just runs on top.
So this, I mean, it's just the hardware kept getting faster too. I mean, we're sort of at this point where I'm wondering what my CPUs are doing most of the time. It seems like they're mostly laying around smoking cigarettes and playing poker.
Well, that's the whole reason for virtualization, was to get rid of the system idle process.
I remember those ads for, you know, your data centers were being emptied out, fewer and fewer racks of machines, because you were doing all the same work, just utilizing the hardware better.
I actually have a funny story about that. Many, many years ago, some of the early days of VMware, I got called out to this lovely place in Ogallala, Nebraska, to go do a virtualization project. They were all physical. They needed to go virtual.
Right.
And we consolidated their entire data center down into like one rack of equipment. Very, you know, a data center full into one rack.
Wow.
And my favorite quote was, after we completed the project and the CEO walks in the data center and sees this one rack of equipment, he wants to know why he still needs to keep all three of their people employed and on staff, because there aren't that many machines as there used to be. So they're like, wait, no, there's lots of machines inside these machines.
Yeah, it's still the same amount of work.
Exactly.
Yeah, the workload doesn't change, just the shape of the workload changes. And of course, the bigger thing I found almost immediately as we started getting comfortable with hypervisors was the number of machines proliferated. I used to not be able to look myself in the eye making a dedicated AD machine. You're just Active Directory, you've got FISMO roles and DNS and DHCP done. You've dedicated a computer to that, that computer is laying around doing nothing. But dedicate a VM to it? Sure.
And again, you're exactly describing the situation that we were talking about a minute ago, this whole move to DevOps. So Chef and Puppet and DSC and all these different technologies and host profiles in vSphere. These technologies are around because exactly of that proliferation of virtual machines. You know, back in the old days, we used to talk about, okay, it's one service per VM.
Right.
And now we're talking about one, you know, subcomponent per VM anymore because of this, you know, hyperscaling of things as people are building out these different solutions.
And granularity is more important than unification.
Correct. It's easier to troubleshoot. It's easier to scale. It's easier to, build systems when you know that each one's independent.
Yeah.
And so you see, although I sometimes wonder exactly how many people are really deeply using some of these technologies outside of your service provider examples, you're seeing an ever greater embrace of these types of virtualization automation, server deployment automation, configuration management automation at the server side than you ever were, as a direct result of that growth of the number of VMs in an environment.
Absolutely. Yeah. And obviously you can get out of control too, but getting to that right level of granularity. So that suddenly the network transport between VMs becomes our primary instrumentation point. You can see what traffic's moving back and forth.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's funny is because several years ago when the whole cloud thing got really, really popular, honestly, the term cloud is, gosh, it's such a, for a group of people who deal in ones and zeros, yeah, you know, on, off, green, red, this, the word cloud was always sort of a terrible word for us because it's squishy and soft and doesn't make any sense.
Imprecise. So
you know, our IT brain system, we reject that. But the reality is that, so when you're looking at cloud, you're just looking at really automation.
Yeah, it's just an architecture.
It's an architecture. And if you get to the point where your size is large enough, where it just makes sense to apply cloud thinking and a cloud and cloud principles, mm-hmm, all you're really talking about is, I'm tired of getting these work orders that say, build me another machine for the Oracle group.
Right.
Why don't I just create the infrastructure to allow the Oracle group to click, check a box and have the system build them their machine and deliver the machine to them without any effort on my part.
Right.
And that really, I think, was the kind of the, and then a miracle occurs.
Yeah.
That a lot of people couldn't move from, I'm afraid of cloud to, hey, this is something I could and would want to implement my,
and my role. And it's not like I limited my job. Now my role is looking at workloads as a whole and saying, do we have enough compute? Do we have enough storage? Do we have enough network for all of the provisioning going out throughout the organization? It's just a level of abstraction higher.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the best systems administrator is the lazy one, because
right,
they're the ones that are going to go, you know what? I'm tired of building machines.
I've got to find an easier way to do this.
I got to find a way to not have to do this.
Yeah.
And they're the ones that are going to figure out, oh, hey, I can build, you know, recipes that not only deploy the virtual machine. I mean, being able to right click and copy from template the virtual machine doesn't get you very far. I mean, to be frank.
Yeah.
I mean, when you right click and create a new virtual machine, that's essentially as far as we got with Ghost. Really.
Yeah, exactly.
So the recipes, then the other DevOps and Chef and Puppet and DSC, all that other stuff there is what takes us from the very beginning stages, which is right click and clone from template, to I've received a work order asking for a specific installation of Oracle with these parameters. And oops, there it is. It's now already built.
Nice. Yeah, it just happens instantly. And speaking of cloud, I got to pay the bills now. So give me 1 second to say Run As Radio is brought to you by ScriptRock, the makers of Guardrail and the fighters of Configuration Drift. Configuration Drift happens in every environment from 5 nodes to 5,000. Guardrail will find and scan the configs of every node in your environment, no matter the platform, and alert you to changes happening across machines. Give it a try for 3 months free with the coupon code RUNASRADIO, all one word, at scriptrock.com/RUNASRADIO. All right. So, I mean, vSphere 6, kind of an incremental improvement, just more of the same, but it really gets down to this instrumentation of knowing how saturated machines are, how utilized machines are. I mean, what's a good number? When are you happy that you're utilizing your hardware well? Is it 80%?
I am not going to answer that question.
Ah, see. I've spoken like a true consultant. Is the correct answer, it depends?
The correct answer is, it depends. and I say that in half seriousness. The half seriousness is it really depends, because I mean, if I have an environment that's running at 95%,
right,
I've got no additional capacity for future needs.
Right.
And the time dilation between, oops, I need a new piece of hardware, and when I get it can defer on, you know, I was talking with some there was this very nice person that was in another one of my conference sessions. Mm-hmm. And I have this joke I tell, which is not really funny sometimes, but I tell this joke, which is to ask people how long it takes between when you realize you need a new piece of hardware and when you get it.
Right.
And this nice person sitting in this conference session told me it took her 2 years.
No, wow.
So from
I can think of them organizations that come in those kind of numbers. Sure.
Exactly. You know, I said, you've got to be federal government, right? But the reason why I say the answer is it depends in terms of, you know, utilization is because the whole process of doing capacity management,
right,
incorporates those sorts of business rules, you know, individual business rules into that process.
Well, and I've always found, and I come from a web performance perspective, it's how erratic is the load? How big is the peaks? How low are the lows? What is the actual standard deviation here? Because if you've got a super consistent load with a steady growth, you can predict, I'm going to need more hardware in 6 months. But I'm doing e-commerce stuff, and they're coming up with new products and new campaigns, and they get spike loads that are 3 or 4 times larger than the average load all of a sudden. And they're wondering why I couldn't anticipate that.
Yep. The whole, I mean, if the term cloud was overused half a decade ago, right. The term DevOps is overused.
It's the new completely destroyed word, right?
It is. And the reality of DevOps is, my people, the IT pro people, need to think more like devs, and the devs need to think more like IT pros. Go.
There's a bit more to it than that, but
there is, but at its most fundamental, if you can get in an IT pro to think more like a dev, they're going to apply these, recipe-based deployment solutions, automation. They're going to give you, the dev, the ability to check a box and create or rebuild your test environment, as opposed to me having to ghost it and rebuild it from scratch 3 weeks later. And on the other side too, the other thing it does is it has the devs thinking, oh gosh, this doesn't really require 64 gigs of RAM for this app.
Yeah.
It actually requires quite a bit less, because in order for this app to run in the infrastructure, I have to be able to give it just as much memory as it requires. So it's a bit of a give-get between the two groups of people. Is it happening? Is it working? In some situations, a bit.
Before we started using the word DevOps, I was talking about functional teams. You can't make a high-performance website if development and operations aren't speaking to each other.
Correct.
The two kind of go together. The fact that we've got a new label on it, it's fine. And the fact that we're seeing a bunch of technology like virtualization that facilitates moving faster makes that communication path more valuable.
Yep, absolutely. Like I said, if you're gonna bet on a particular thing to think about for the future of your career, DevOps is such a hard thing to wrap your mind around.
Sure.
I can't put my fingers on it.
Yeah, what is this exactly? Because it's a bunch of things, really.
But the technologies that facilitate that, and vSphere and the other platforms like Hyper-V and Zen Server facilitate that as well. But just taking your brain as an IT pro now, taking your brain and exploding it into a million little bits and then reassembling them back together from the perspective of, I don't want to do manual work anymore.
Right.
That's really the best thing you can do. A person, I think, can do these days to really further their career for the medium term, intermediate term.
I have whiteboarded for a performance, a large scale website. If you had to rebuild this from scratch with a button click, like, what would the steps be? No Word documents are allowed. As soon as you read a Word doc, you've lost. You want a button click and everything could be built. Scripts for establishing the VMs, scripts for configuring operating systems, installing software, configuring the network, like just automation for all of that from nothing to complete.
Yep.
And that's a full whiteboard. That is a very long chain of events. And often there's areas you sort of mark out and go, magic happens here. Not quite sure. iPhone so-and-so, and then stuff happens.
I actually, it was originally a thought experiment that turned into a conference session that turned into a Pluralsight course, actually two Pluralsight courses. But it was, you're having ice cream one day and you're thinking to yourself, huh, I wonder about that. What would it take to just hit one button? And so I actually put together, using Hyper-V, using VMM, using the entire Microsoft stack between Ops Manager and Config Manager and VMM and Orchestrator and all these different tools together. I wanted to be able to take a remote desktop services environment, straight up RDS environment, and be able to give the help desk the ability to rebuild the entire environment. That was my thought experiment.
Wow.
I actually built it. And, filmed the whole, like I said, it's in the Pluralsight catalog. A couple of courses there, the beginning and the advanced pieces for how to essentially create that. And you know, what's funny is in many ways, it's not really all that hard.
Hmm.
Really. It's a bunch of building. I mean, you know, this, it's a bunch of building blocks.
Yep.
That once you have those building blocks, you can then reuse them for other purposes. So the first time you go through it, it's awful. Right.
But, yep.
You know, the the first time you take a trip outside the country, it's some parts of it are difficult.
Oh, you know, the first time you racked a server was a pain in the butt. How many times did you have to take it back out again and mount it again? And no, you did those rails upside down and you didn't put the cable controller in properly. Like the first time you do any of these things, you did a terrible job.
It's always difficult. Yeah. But then after you get the building blocks in place, you get this quiver. That's my favorite word. This quiver of little building blocks that you can pull arrows out of that quiver and go, hey, I know how to rebuild this. I know how to rebuild this. And so, like I said, that was a thought experiment because RDS still today is kind of it's not tough, but it's not really a trivial installation either. And it was one of those things where I wanted to go, I wanted to be able to do it with one button. And then I wanted to be able to give the help desk that button so that if it failed, which RDS fails sometimes, that they could go click and then just rebuild the whole thing.
Yeah. Just start it over. Not a big deal. It's almost spooky how quickly we can do some of that stuff. And utility computing just scales it up even further. Let's build another copy of this entire instance and run a test platform from it. You know, the radical impact that this has had on testing, it staggers me, which I also laugh about that because that's really where a lot of this virtualization technology came from.
It did. Back a zillion years ago when I was building weather satellites for the federal government, VMware actually approached us with this weird thing called virtualization. We were charged with building the dev and test environment for the ground station for this particular weather satellite program. And they came to us and ultimately we did not choose them, although that was not my choice.
Right.
And the onerous process that the poor guys charged with managing that test environment had to go through on an everyday basis to rebuild things between tests.
Oh,
runs.
Sure.
It still kind of gives you a bit of shivers. I mean,
You're going to talk about DLL hell here. Like that just gives me chills every time.
Oh, they rebuilt the silly thing, I think, once a day.
Yeah.
Like from scratch. And so, you know, just taking that and thinking about some of that was a weather satellite, you know, system.
Yeah.
But think about some of the other systems that are out there that are in many ways even more complex these days. It boggles the mind.
Well, just getting to a state of repeatability that nothing is special and sacred. I really love the whole servers are now cattle, not pets. It's like, no, shoot any of them and make a new one. Not a big deal.
Indeed. Indeed.
Yeah. Except when it comes down to certain things like Active Directory actively resists being able to strip Active Directory completely bare and rebuild it like that. Bringing Active Directory back to life from scratch. Is scary.
It's all scripting.
It is all scripting, but what was the state when it went down? How is the sync between the different instances? Like, I'm still of a mind that I'd rather have at least one AD server alive than actually start restoring backups. That is still a frightening process.
You know, and speaking of Microsoft technologies and virtualization too, we've been talking about vSphere, but gosh, even Microsoft has got some pretty amazing stuff going on with Hyper-V these days.
Their Motion product works too. It's not even a big deal anymore. You don't really need SCVMM. In 2012, you could point to any VM and said, no, I want this over here. And it just happens.
Well, and that's just the nuts and bolts. But let me tell you what, so there's Hyper-V, right?
Yep.
Hyper-V all by itself it's awesome, but you know, it's hypervisor.
Mm-hmm.
But when you finally get around to taking all the system center components and getting them installed and getting them integrated and getting them working as one cohesive unit, you're talking about some incredible, we talked about automation, but you're talking about some incredible automation that you can have once you lay all those pieces into place.
Now, if you're going to say all, that's a pretty long list. So configuration manager, operations manager, virtual machine manager.
And orchestrator.
Orchestrator. Service manager.
Service manager. SNA, SMA.
Yeah.
Service management automation. The whole Azure pack, Azure stack thing going on.
Right. Which is the tool ultimately allow your scenario of allowing the Oracle guys to light up a new Oracle instance. That's what that Azure pack's about.
It's just a skin over the top of all of those. And you're right. It's a fairly complex installation and it takes a pretty hardy individual to really decide that they're going to be that person to learn all of those technologies because it takes a while to really figure them out.
Sure.
But man, if you can put all those things together, I had my own aha moment with it. I finally got around to, you know, installing Service Manager and getting to know it. And because, like I said, I've been doing Config Manager since the 1.2 days, been doing Ops Manager forever, been doing VMMs as long as there's been a VMM.
Yeah.
And even some Orchestrator too, although not as much as I probably should have. But then, you know, really kind of poking your fingers into Service Manager and seeing, wow, this is a pretty swell little thing here. It's got its idiosyncrasies, but they all do. And
but this is the point where you start paying the reward for actually having configuration set up correctly and using Orchestrator correctly. So suddenly a work item could come in or a ticket could come in through Service Manager and you can push it out through Orchestrator and it just does the thing.
Yeah, it's connecting the pieces together.
Yeah.
So it's nice to be able to monitor stuff, Ops Manager. It's nice to be able to config stuff, Config Manager, but being able to then tie all these things together, that's when you get and I'm sure everyone else has their aha moment, this sort of getting the jelly legs. Oh my goodness, this is incredible.
I can do all this stuff.
Yeah.
Not for free.
Not for free, but you know what? Based off of, you know, just the optimizations you get, you'll pay for itself in no time.
Yeah, these are clear ROIs in terms of how quickly you can react to things. Yeah.
I hate to fanboy any technology, but man, just the jelly legs you get whenever you see that sometimes.
It's pretty cool.
It's still pretty cool.
Well, I think the System Center stack has generally got a bad rap that, a bunch of those different pieces were bought from Microsoft from different sources. Some things have been built up, some things have been rebuilt. Like, you're trying to figure out what's the version where it all comes together.
Well, you're exactly right. So, and there are different bad tastes that one gets from each product. So, Ops Manager, people get a bad taste because they were looking at that alerts view and it would just overwhelm them with
just
alerts.
Just blinded by a stream of stuff.
But most people don't know that the alerts view is not where you're supposed to start. That's not the actual best view to be looking at. That's the last place you go, or maybe the first place you go when you figure out something's wrong. In the case of Config Manager, it's that poor junior help desk person that you inadvertently gave access to who sent the package to the All Systems collection and inadvertently rebooted everyone at the same time or blue screened them.
I remember doing that with SMS.
Oh, yeah.
Knocking out the SMS client on all of the workstations in the process.
We've all been there. And let me tell you what, there's no better experience than having that happen and it not be you, but having that happen and having to clean it up and you really use your brain to try to figure out. There is no better way to learn the deepest, darkest inner recesses of the Windows operating system than to have to undo something that was done with a configuration manager.
Yeah.
So that tool is challenging for completely different reasons. In the case of VMM, I think a lot of people got a bad taste because the first couple of versions of VMM just sucked. I mean,
yeah, they were trying to figure out what it was going to be for, and it didn't make sense.
Oh, it was terrible. And VMM 2012 R2 is really the first version of VMM that I would feel comfortable installing. Mm-hmm. And I adore that version. That version is just spectacular in terms of what it can do. So there is a very real reason as to why some people just have their issues against the System Center stack. But in many cases, or most cases, you can either change that or get away with that with changing your processes, changing how you approach things, locking down your permissions, or using the most recent version.
Right. All of those things are true. What's the equivalent of System Center wrapped around VMware?
Well, there's a variety of different tools there. So VMware has its own orchestrator.
Yep.
It's one of those tools that you wish got more attention. VMware Orchestrator is also the focus of VMware Orchestrator was a bit too heavy on the developer and not on the IT pro person. So a lot of the IT pro people took one look at it and went, ooh, that's hard, and then moved on.
Right.
But as you start
a little too codey.
Well, yeah. Well, it is codey. You've got to know some JavaScript to get any further than deploy new VM, I think.
Oh, I see.
And so that probably was the biggest sort of hurdle from the orchestrator perspective. There is also VCOPS or VROPS or the vRealize Operations Manager system that vCenter uses as its equivalent to OpsMan.
Right.
Which was another acquisition on VMware's part, which is one of those you either kind of love it or hate it sort of solutions.
Right.
And admittedly, in the VMware ecosystem, there are a lot of third-party solutions that may provide better instrumentation or maybe just different instrumentation than what you would get out of a VROPS.
That's fair. And it, you know, everybody's got a different way of approaching this. And often it's, you know, really it's been Microsoft that's been trying to offer all up solutions. It's kind of normal elsewhere in the world to assemble a solution.
Correct.
So it's nice to hear that there's options there and you can sort of feel around for it. It's also true in the Microsoft stack. It's just, there's always stuff coming from other people besides Microsoft that can work in that stack.
True. Very true. Microsoft, essentially, when they changed their pricing on the System Center stack to make it more or less part of your existing purchase, mm-hmm. they managed to extinguish an entire segment of the ecosystem for these management products. So, I'll buy this instead of that. And the management product ecosystem really diminished quite significantly over several years. Just people just, the pricing just couldn't compete.
Yeah, you can't make a living anymore. You got to go look elsewhere. Well, I feel like we've given lots of love to Hyper-V and vSphere and sort of left Zen out in the cold this time around, but we're kind of out of time. Maybe we'll do that in another show.
Sounds like a lot of fun.
All right, Greg, thanks so much for chatting with us. It was a good fun time.
Thank you. And as I said before, I've got plenty of these great new courses coming up over at www.pluralsight.com.
Yeah, I'll include a link to your authors list in the show notes so folks
bunch
can find
of authors.
Those shows.
Gosh, we've got so many courses over there. We've got
a lot.
And a ton of people. Like the user count's just going through the roof. So
that's a good
if
thing.
You're looking for content, whether you're a dev, whether you're an IT pro person, even if you're an Adobe, you know, creative type individual, come check us out.
Absolutely. Thank you, Greg, and we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.